Hey, welcome back to another HVAC Success Secrets Reveal with Thaddeus and Evan. Today, we've got on none other than the legend himself, Billy Stevens. Billy's been in the industry for over 20 years, crushing it both as an owner, as an investor, and as the owner and operator of Sarah Systems. Thad, what was your favorite part of this episode?
Man, we got deep in a lot of things. If I were to pick one, though, I think I like the idea of how to properly share your financials with your team to be able to show them, hey, it takes a lot more to run a business than you think. That was a great topic. Billy, how about yourself?
Well, personally, I like the transparency part. I really think that once owners open themselves up and be able to give back and show the transparency of their business, their numbers, and all these things within the company, they create this culture of trust between themselves and their coworkers.
I love that part. And of course, transparency really starts with integrity. If you don't have integrity with yourself, if you don't have an integrity within your team culture, you really have a foundation that's built on sand, right? And you really want to build a strong foundation that's built with integrity so that you can be transparent with your team, show them everything, and really hold honor within your business. I love that part of the show. Billy really hammers that home right at the beginning. So make sure you pay attention to that part. But we want to hear from you. What was your favorite part of this episode? Leave it in the comments down below. And make sure you join the live show next week where you can join in on the chats, ask your questions from all of our great guests. Enjoy the show. Cheers. Hey, welcome back to another HVAC Success Secrets Revealed with Thaddeus and Evan, where we have good conversations with good people, and any good conversation worth having is worth having drunk. Cheers, my friend.
Cheers. Peanut butter whiskey.
Sounds awful. Got tequila.
It is awful. I don't even think I'm going to be able to drink it. That was a waste of money, but hey, whatever.
Yep. You're living
right there. Yeah, yeah. That's awesome. You can only do it once, right?
Hey, we got, for the first time this year, the one and only Billy Stevens back on the show.
Yes, sir.
I can't wait for this conversation. It's going to be all around culture, what it is that you can do to improve your team from the inside out. I mean, we've heard all the sayings before, culture eats strategy for breakfast. I mean, if the number one way that you can improve your team, number one thing that you can do for your customer service is to take care of your people and to really drive that culture home. Best way to recruit, improve your culture. I don't know how many more people within the industry can really drive this point home, but I'm excited for the conversation regardless because Billy's always done a great job of taking complex ideas and making them really, really simple. So I'm excited for this conversation today.
Right. And one that I'm also super excited to get into is just sharing your financials with your employees. Mm-hmm. And how do you actually do that in the right way to be able to create buy-in? And I know he has the posts that go out every Saturday in the Facebook groups, and he alluded to some of that as well, especially in our group. And it's this concept that I think a lot of business owners need to wrap their head around more to be able to adequately do, because they only see the techs only see the big ticket. They don't actually know what goes into it. So getting through and getting clear on that and doing it in the right way is, it's going to be a great part. I'm looking forward to that.
Absolutely. Awesome. But before we get to the show, first word from our sponsors. Thad, you're up first.
Cool. Well, we actually have a new one, but his logo isn't on the bottom, so that's my bad. So Chirp is a ultimate automation toolbox for home service pros. They help you. It gets you leads faster. You connect faster, close more deals, which is a good thing. So what I like about it, direct integrations, aka drop-down menus, connects you right to ServiceTitan, Housecall Pro, Jobber, and of course, Sarah Systems, which is our other sponsor. Sarah Systems is a field service management software. When you combine the two of those together, you can unlock amazing things. What I really like about Sarah, the capabilities to track job time efficiency, dynamic dispatching built right onto your website, which helps your SEO, pricing models that make sense. And here's the kicker, the icing on the cake, so to speak. Sarah users have an average increase of 52% of their revenue within the first 6 months and double their profits on average.
Love it.
I realized I didn't drop the links.
I know. I was going to do it for you. Here we go.
Okay.
Sarah.tech/HVAC revealed and chirp.com/Ursher?FERPER=OPM.
They'll be in the links.
They'll be in the show notes down below. And of course, our last.
Oh, with Chirp. With Chirp, by the way, that link gets you 25% off your first 3 months.
Love that. Of course, Profit Rocket, Mr. Victor Rancour. If you are an HVAC business owner and you are really wondering what it is that Victor did to grow his business from zero to 40 million in 4 years, how he did it with his SOPs, how he did it with his team, how he did it with hiring, the blueprint is exactly what you need to grow your business. He lays it all out for you. All you can imagine for call scripts, marketing plans, call processes, and so much more. It's all in the blueprint. Go check it out. Callprofitrocket.com and get signed up for a demo today. Let's get it.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to HVAC Success Secrets Revealed, a show where we interview industry leaders and disruptors, revealing the success secrets to create and unleash the ultimate HVAC business. Now your hosts, Thaddeus and Evan.
Billy, welcome back, sir.
Hey, guys.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Yeah? Did you have a nice little break there over the holidays?
I did. How was it up in Canada? Nice and cold?
Cold as fuck.
It's 84 degrees in Dallas today.
Oh, it's partly sunny and 23 Fahrenheit here today.
Ooh, I have actually the same temperature for once as you, except for it's 25 Fahrenheit. So there we go.
It's brutal.
You're 25 Fahrenheit?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, because you guys use the metric system. So for everybody on this show to know, when they talk numbers, it's probably numbers you don't recognize.
Usually. That's why we convert usually. It.
Yeah, well, if you go Celsius, it's minus.
All right, so I've worked on you long enough to be converted to the American way of doing things.
That's it.
The only way, because they are the only country in the world that still uses Fahrenheit.
Maybe not the only country, but... I remember there was a big push when I was a kid to get us to go metric when I was like first, second, third grade. And in fourth grade, they said, to hell with it. they just stopped pushing it, and they didn't ever push it again in the schools.
Stubborn bunch you got down there.
Yeah.
Eh?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, so,
culture. I'm excited for this conversation. Before we get into some of your talking points and some of your tips and really diving into three different areas and how you can improve your culture, I'm curious if you could even share a story of when the culture wasn't as good when you were running your company. And then we'll get into how you identified that, how you took back control and all of those aspects of it. But if you can talk a little bit to just how bad culture was in your company before you realized there was an issue.
Absolutely. So this going back many years, this is back when I owned Berkey's, my first company. And as we were growing the company, you take on these different jobs, right? In the beginning, you kind of do everything, and then you hire managers to manage, and now you're managing managers. And then before you know it, your managers are managing managers, and you're just even further away from the action. And so culture can change just based off of the things that I would do, the things maybe you had a manager that just didn't get along with the group or whatever, and that can create bad culture. It just can happen in so many different ways. And so this is what I was experiencing. I basically had a manager that was causing some culture problems, and I wanted to fix it. And of course, we changed the management team and started doing the things the way I wanted to do. And I hired these people on what's the most important part for me is integrity. Integrity is what I look at in a person, because as I always say, you can't teach integrity or honesty. You're either born with it or you're not. And that's the thing that is very important, is to find these people. And it doesn't take long to figure out what kind of person they are. And so I would really lean on integrity. And integrity, I actually pulled this up because I knew we were going to be talking about today. So that integrity means being honest and having strong and moral principles. It also, a person with integrity behaves ethically and does the right thing, even behind closed doors. So what that means is, whether it's a partner in a business that you're partnered with, or if it's employees or managers or whatever, how do they talk about you when you're not at the office or not in front of other peers, right? And that is when you know your integrity is, or excuse me, your culture has improved, when what they're doing behind the scenes is up to snuff, if you will, or a positive impact, even beyond that. So you want your employees talking about your company just like you do when they're not at work. And this is how you really can judge your culture and how it's going for you. And so if they are really involved in your company and really talk about it when they're at a restaurant, they see someone, they meet some people and they want to talk about their company, then you have a pretty good culture per se. But that could be a person by person deal. And so what I did, honestly, it kind of leads into what we were going to talk about today. The second thing we were going to talk about was sharing your financials. The first thing we were going to talk about, and we can talk about that first, because that kind of leads into what your question was. I was having culture problems because employees, and they think that we make all the money and they don't get any. They don't get as much, right? And that is really, that opened my eyes one day when I kept hearing it, but not really understanding it or doing anything about it. And so it just dawned on me one day to have everybody in the meeting. And we tore off some pieces of paper back then, because we didn't have a whole bunch of money. So we used paper and tore it up, and we put it in, and we gave everybody a piece of that paper. And we asked them, if you bring in $1,000 to the company, how much does the company make in profit? Write down your dollar figure. And so depending on the number that you get will tell you what your culture is. So that's the beauty of this little test. It's a really good test. And so if the majority of your answers are over 30% of the $1,000 or $300, then your culture is probably not that good because they feel like you're getting all the money and they're not. If the majority of your answers are below that number, then they understand that the company is doing the best it can to give back to the employees, to the community, and all these things. And so just do a blind test. It's basically the Pepsi versus Coke blind test kind of thing. Ask them this question. Don't prep them on it. And ask everybody in the company, if you will, that doesn't work in the financial department because they see the real numbers, right? And you'd be surprised. But when I did this little exercise, the number one answer was $500, half of it.
Wow.
The second most largest, the second number where we got the most answers for was actually $1,000. They didn't even understand the question.
Gotcha.
Right? Which was scary. We're like, all right, they don't even understand the question. So we got a lot to talk about here. And then the ones that said $500, they just thought that they made $500 for every $1,000 we brought in. And the truth was back then, we probably made negative $20 or negative $100 back then because we were trying to figure out how to make our business better. And I can be honest with you, I doubt very seriously if it was more than $50 on $1,000 back then. And the scary thing is, I still see this today. I know you brought up Victor earlier, but his number was very negative, right? When we started helping him with his business just a little over a year ago. And so we started doing these exercises on how to have these different meetings and how to build the culture and what all these things. And it helped him out rather quickly because I worked with him as much as I could and spent many times flying out to California to help him out and get this stuff fixed for them. And so we do this with all of our people that are in Sarah, our software. We actually have people that are on staff and that's what they do. We do check-ins with them every month and everything and help them go along through the system through a way that they can improve culture and things like that. And so again, if anything's over $300, culture's probably not that good. If it's below $300, more of them are below $300. Doesn't mean your culture is great, but it's not. You could get a feel for the room based off of these numbers. It's just a simple thing to do. Very easy to do. Very simple. And so from that point forward, I made it a mission to talk about how much it really costs to run a business. And if you're losing money or you're making very little money, I say 100%, you show them your financial statements. I do full transparency. Or you can build graphs and you can pick items out. And the one item that always blew them away, there's several when you have your financial statements and you show them to them. Like at Billy Go today, I mean, we probably spend $20,000 a month on fuel.
Right.
But they only see the $100 that's going in their tank. And they don't realize that bill's $20,000 or more. And so that's a big eye opener. And then you'd show them how much it costs to insure the building or maybe even the rent. And one of the things that I really like to do is talk to them on a level that helps them understand what we're talking about when we start adding all these big numbers up. And so one of the things that I like to do is break it down to how many dollars per hour does it take to pay this one bill? How much work do we have to do to pay this one bill? So if we have a $20,000 per month gas fuel bill, and you sell $20,000 worth of air conditioners, did you pay your gas bill? No, you just bought air conditioners that cost you at least half that money. Air conditioning equipment, the labor, all these things that cost you at least half or more of that money, right? And so take one big job and show them how it can't even pay something as simple as the gas bill or something as simple as the electric bill. And just break it down on those terms. Just pick one job and pick one monthly item and just show them how many times you got to sell that thing, that one item, just to pay this one bill. And that's when you start opening their eyes to how much it costs to run a business. And the other thing is, while you're trying to educate them on this, you're reaffirming this in your own mind. You're reaffirming what you're saying because you're speaking it out loud and you're talking to these employees and to your peers. And you're explaining and they're learning from you while you're learning from yourself. Because if you repeat it and talk about it, you'll start doing it. It'll make you go into action and make you start thinking about it, working on it, and doing things about it. And then they can see that you're trying to make these improvements. And so you can always raise prices, or you can raise some prices or leave them the same and start working on the efficiency of the business, which that's what I prefer to do. I was never wanting to be the highest price company in town. I just wanted to be the most efficient and make my money through efficiency. And that's what we try to teach everyone each and every day. And so this is how we would do that with these people.
I love it. A couple points that I wanted to highlight in there. And I think this guy kind of ties back to, how do you start having these conversations? How do you bring this up? And it starts with identifying it as a real problem first. And then once you identify the problem, now we have to realize that to change needs to start with ourselves as a business owner. If we don't start showing up with more integrity, how can we expect our team to? If we don't show up and set the example of what the culture needs to be, how do we expect our team to buy into anything, right? And I love what you said around, who are you when no one's looking, right? When your team isn't in the office, are you on Facebook looking at reels? Or are you thinking about, how can I market my business better? How can I improve my business? Are you watching for entertainment? Or are you watching for education, right? Or are you going through your P&Ls so you can look for ways to be more efficient? Do you understand what your P&Ls are? Right? Are you setting aside time to know what your training plan is for the next month, 2 months, 3 months within your business, so you can continue to grow your team and hire better and recruit better and train better? Like, all of these things are constantly on the mind of, I know, Thaddeus and I, when it comes to our business, it's exactly what you need to be thinking about to take time away from being in your business and actually working on your business. Amber always talks about that. Did you have anything from that rant that you wanted to touch on?
Now that my internet's a little bit more stable and I could hear parts of most of that conversation. It's funny because my internet was saying, yeah, full bars, but streamers give me grief. But the big part is, like, okay, now you've identified it and you're talking about financials. Do you just show them all the financials, or do you show them as percentages and break that down? The next step of that question is, do you do that one-on-one, or are you doing it as part of a company-wide meeting or department meeting? How does that generally get structured?
Yeah. So the way I do it is, it's really hard to go through an entire financial and to teach. You have to pick a section. And I like to start with the overhead costs before we get into the COGS and give them a real idea of what it costs to actually operate a business. You go to this building every day and they don't realize what these things cost. You don't realize that they're tens of thousands, if hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, depending on what size you are. And it doesn't get any cheaper. That's a fixed cost. So we work on talking about fixed costs so they understand that relationship. Selling a $15,000 air conditioner does not pay your $15,000 a month rent, right? And so that's where I start talking about it, because I want them to buy in on what it costs to operate the business before we start working on the COGS side, which is what they're responsible for. They're responsible for the COGS. They're responsible for selling the product for the price that it needs to be sold for, and so that we can make the profit that we need to make, and then getting the job, getting the photos, doing everything they're supposed to do to give us information so we can do the best job that we can and provide the best service for the customer and do all this efficiently and profitably. And that is what I would work on second. So I would definitely start on the overhead cost and pick two or three of them. Just pick two or three of them just to get the conversation going. And just telling them what your rent is giving transparency instead of us against them. The business is your employees. It's not the owners. And I think we kind of, in a way, forget that sometimes. And we don't need to be forgetting that. We need to understand that the business is the owner, is not the owners. It is the people that are at the business. Billy Go is not me. Billy Go is that person in front of Billy Go's customer. And that is your customer, that person in front of the customer that gives you money. Your customer is your employees. And once you change that mindset to who really is your customer and understand that your employee is your customer and your employee needs to have this transparency as much as you want to give them. If you don't want to show them your entire financial statements, there is nothing wrong with it, but at least show them something. Get them thinking about what it really costs. Show them what it costs to replace brakes after a year. How many brake jobs have you had to pay for and how much they cost? They don't think about things like that. They just don't. And so start talking about it so they understand what you're talking about. And then once you apply all these big dollars to a service call, they find out really quickly that maybe I ought to be a better employee and not just always be angry and just do the bare minimum. Maybe asking me to put on stickers there's a reason for it. Maybe asking me to take these photos and organizing them and giving detail on everything that I find, whether I sell the job or not, I need to do this every time. And that's what's awesome about our software is we make sure they do that. If you want to get that model and serial number on our software. Actually, this is dropping next week. You literally, they cannot move forward. You get a zap. You'll be able to get a message inside of Sarah to whoever you want it to go to and go, Joe Bob's fixing to close out this call, and he has not collected any of this information. Do you want to reply back to him? I mean, it's job-by-job management is what we're really good at. We don't live in the past like the other softwares. We are actually live and in front of the call and ready and doing things. You have this visibility that you just don't have on the other softwares. That's what makes ours unique. And that's the point that I'm trying to make when I talk about Sarah and when I talk about what I'm doing. It's not the way software was built. It's the way software should be built and is built going forward. It is live in the situation, and you can do these things and start following along to have them do the things that you want. But if you get them that transparency to make them understand why you need it and how much it costs if you don't get it, then they start understanding and applying themselves better, and you get better employees. And when you increase, and this is a culture building, that's all I'm trying to do here, is increase the culture to a more positive everything, mindset, positive energy throughout the building. Everybody loves coming to work. It's not a chore. That's the things that we're trying to help companies do. It's not always about raising prices and pulling those kind of triggers. If you build your culture, I'm telling you right now, you will have enough techs to hire. I hear this all the time. There's just not enough techs. And we all feel the same thing. What made my company so profitable back in the 80s and 2000, what makes BillyGo so profitable and grow so fast? It's because of the culture. The day that we opened up BillyGo and people found out within 24 hours, we had 36 people apply for a job without ever posting an ad. So we didn't steal those people from any company. Those people didn't like the culture where they were at, and they got the heck out and wanted to come to work for us. But unfortunately for them, we only had room for 5 or 6. We didn't even have a business yet. I mean, that's how quickly they came. Right. And then we said, just hold on, come back when you can, when we can hire you. And so it's still anyone. They came to us. And that's the whole idea. We build a culture, that culture spreads, people hear about it, and they keep coming. We're in that tech hiring phase of our business right now. And we have not run an ad for a tech, but we have hired 4 techs so far this fall. And we've hired really good techs from, and they come to our company because they heard about the culture, and they've heard about the opportunity to work 12 months a year, even in the HVAC business. And they've heard all these cool things. And so they start coming to us when it slows down other places. And culture is what brings them. That's it. And so we hire again on integrity, honesty. If they don't fit that criteria, we don't hire those folks. And we'll pass over tons of them, where most companies, unfortunately, are in dire straits, and they'll take just about anybody to get a body in a truck so they can do some work. Right. And because we've been so conditioned in this industry that the only way to succeed is through revenue growth. And that is fundamentally right, but wrong. There is no reason to grow your business tremendously if you have all this dysfunction, and it's a lot harder to grow it if you have a lot of dysfunction. Why do some companies grow really well and other ones stay stagnant? I see companies all the time, 25, 30 years old, and hadn't had a 1% growth in 15 years. It's the same number every year. It fluctuates just a little bit back and forth every year. Never any growth over many, many, many years. And because they never set a culture that would make people want to come work for them. And that's why they don't grow. And so culture is very, very, very important in what we do every day. Transparency creates culture, positive culture.
Well, and it's huge, right? I mean, you think, like, even when you said, you know, the business is employees, not the owners, it's people, product, pricing, and the people are your employees. I've said that numerous times till I'm blue in the face. Know about it. And when you really boil it down, I mean, you look at some of the greats, and Tommy Mello even said it too when he was on our podcast. I recruit people from all over the place because they know about my name and they know about the business because we've created winning culture. People get mad at him for the prices that he charges, but he also pays people a livable wage, and they have a great following within that. And that's really, again, to echo what you said, separates those individuals who are growing their business that are not, because people want to work there. People want to stay there. They're bought into this total vision that you have been able to create as an organization. To back up a second to the overhead costs, and so great, you've got this great, amazing culture. You know, hiring is easy. You're talking about your financials. And one question that came to mind is, there's a lot of, you're a big proponent too of hitting a solid margin. You get to, let's call it 20%, right? 15 to 20%. Some people are at 5 to 10. Let's use math, 20%. You're a $10 million per year business. That's a $2 million per year profit. And if you're showing all of your financials, not just the expenses part, I mean, that's obviously part of it so they can see it on job. But if they're seeing a 20% net on there and they're doing the math, I'm like, okay, well, if you've went to the down the road of everything, right? You've opened up the door to show everything. Now they see this 20% net and a $2 million profit. How would you combat a conversation like that? What would you say in that moment?
Sure. So we have a year-end party and give them 20% of the money for every employee there, just like we did this year. I mean, we give it back. We give back to our people. I would pay taxes on it if I didn't. So Why don't I just give it back to them and then lower my tax bill that way? That is what you do is, all right, you helped us succeed. Now we need to keep X number of dollars in the bank because we have out of that profit, you need to explain what profit is. And that's a big thing here. Just because you see $2 million of profit doesn't mean you have $2 million in the bank. With that profit, you have to pay your taxes. And so just for easy math, your tax bill is 40 cents, 40%, right? So you're looking at $800,000 if you just had a straight up tax with no deductions, right? So about, call it 30%, $600,000 worth of taxes. So immediately you went from $2 million to $1.4 million. And so, okay, still $1.4 million is a whole bunch of money. But then this is where your balance sheet comes in. This is where you pay your debt. This is how you pay your debt service. And so when you buy a new truck in today's world, I think if you could even get a truck, it's going to cost you $60,000+ or more, like way more, but at least 60. I'm sorry, I don't know what I pay for them. So I'm assuming they're 60 plus to 100 or whatever they are. And you're going to pay for those through financing. And you use your profits to pay for those financing charges. So even if you did do a 60-month loan on those trucks, which might as well, right? At $60,000 without any interest at all, it's $1,000 a month. Now that you have 10 trucks, that's $10,000 a month, which is $120,000 a year. So now you've got $120,000 that is no longer in that profit because you had to use that profit to pay that number. And first and foremost, if you're making $2 million, you probably have way more than 10 trucks. So that you're paying on, especially when you're a four-year-old business, right? Yep. And you pay for those costs. You pay for any debt that you have to grow your business. Maybe you bought a company or maybe you borrowed money to start the business that you're in. All of that stuff is paid through the profit. And then this is how you explain it to your employees. And you just do a spreadsheet and show them where all the money went. That's all you got to do. Or you don't have to show them that at all if that's not what you want to do. You can show them the after amount after you pay all these costs. But my goal here is just show them something. Let's just start showing transparency and showing and making that analogy that, all right, I just got $10,000 a month on this building here, and I need this many systems to be sold before I can pay my rent. You can only do that if you show them numbers. And when you show them numbers like that, it makes a big difference to them. Now we're talking their language. Oh my gosh, I thought I sold the system for 20 grand. The man put 20 grand in his back pocket. No, it's not how it works. Even in that situation that you just said, if we made a 20% profit, a $20,000 system at 20% is $4,000. You still need to sell 2.5 of those before you even pay the rent at $20,000 each. Mm-hmm. And so
reframing it.
Yeah, it's extremely revealing to your employees because they don't know. Our school system in America, I don't know how they do it in Canada, but in America, we do not talk about money at all. It is the
Hey, they don't talk about it here either.
It is the craziest thing. We're in a capitalist society. Our entire country is designed around capitalism, and we don't mention it once in 12 years of schooling. And I don't understand. And they talk about disadvantage. It is disadvantage. Why can't we teach people this that don't understand this? I mean, it came to me naturally. It comes to you guys naturally. That's why you're entrepreneurs. Naturally, you start understanding money or otherwise you wouldn't make it in business. And so we do have an advantage because naturally we understand. And so why aren't we talking about money in school? I don't understand that. But anyway, that's not my issue. That's the school system.
Well, it is a good conversation, right? Right? You may think about that. Right. And like when you said it comes to us naturally, then the only reason that I think it comes to me naturally is my parents normalized the conversation. I had a paper out in grade 5 onwards. I was 10 years old working and earning money. And I think I was probably earning money before that with chores. And so they normalized part of it for me to help understand the concept of money. I was 15 or 16 when I had my first credit card. I understood the concept of credit and debt at 16 because of my parents, right? And that's where part falls to. So, and part of our podcast isn't just business things. So I'm going to ask you this in terms of a parent, you're successful, you have kids, you've taught a lot about money. if somebody's listened to this and said, maybe I should talk to my kids about some of the basics of money, what sort of advice would you give them?
So talking to your kids, I started very early. In fact, my wife and I, before we had any money, that we created an invest as soon as our kids got a Social Security card, which is pretty much right away after they're born, we started investing for them. And we turned it into a bill. I mean, it was like paying your electric bill or your rent. I mean, every month we put in $220 to fund our kids' education. We started from day one because we knew that over time we would have enough money to pay if they wanted to go to college, that we would have the money just in case we didn't have it. If we would have spent it and we weren't successful, then we were getting all these loans that everybody wished that the government would pay off. Right. And so immediately we started talking about that money and explaining that to our kids, why we were doing this, why they needed to work hard in school so that they can further their education and that their parents have been working on saving this money for them. And so the conversation of money started with my kids right away. I'm the kind of guy that will sit down in a restaurant and I'll go back in the day, they'll have a little container there that has the sugar packets. And nobody thinks twice about the sugar packets, right? They rip a couple of them open, pour them in their tea or their coffee. Well, we would talk about the guy that made the paper that the sugar was in. That's the guy that's making all the money, right? And we would just basically talk about that. We didn't talk about the guy that had the Ferrari. We talked about the guy that made the paper because that was the guy that had the Ferrari. Mm-hmm. Right. And when we would talk about cars, because I like cars, we talked about the guy that made the lug nuts because there's 20 of those that go on every car and every car has them. But yet there's only so many Ferraris. Right. Mm-hmm. So all the cars have lug nuts. Who do you think has more money, the Ferrari guy or the guy making the lug nuts? So that's the point, is I would educate my kids on the little things, the things that are just sitting right in front of us that aren't obvious to us, that entrepreneurs took the time to go, man, instead of having that sugar thing that's got all the rice in it and to keep the sugar dry, and then occasionally you see the ants that have gotten in it, and there's always ants coming in the restaurant because you got the sugar container out on the table all the time. Well, the guy saw that and said, why don't I just put it in paper packets and stop that problem? Keep the sugar dry. And so this is how I talk to my kids from day one, constantly talking to them. And my kids both are very successful. They work hard. They have money in the bank and they're 25 and 23. It's because when they started working, they understood they needed to save some of their money and prepare for the future and buy a home. Those are the things that come naturally from that. So I take this same concept and I do this with my kids at work, right? All those people at work, no matter how old they are, it's not too late to start learning about this, about how much it costs to make things and to do things and to run these businesses. And it's an easy conversation. And I even learned more about myself and money as I talked more and more about it. That's when I got better at my business, right? And I took my business more seriously. Instead of it being a grind, it became a mission. I was driven by mission to actually make money and not worry about whether or not we could go on a vacation or if I wanted to do whatever. I wanted to be that position. Really, my motivation was I wanted to be able to wear shorts to work and not be told what to wear.
I swear, like when we met you down in Dallas and you walked out of a meeting, I'm not going to say who it was with, but some very high level individuals within the space, and you have, I think, a hoodie on and shorts and sneakers, and I think your hat might not have even been straight. And you're like, this is how I am. This is how I roll, right? But it's power, right? I mean, like, it's self-confidence in yourself, right? I mean,
I don't need a tie and a fancy suit. That's the last thing I want.
Right?
I want to be myself. I don't want to be something that I'm not. I'm not a snake. I don't want to be a snake oil salesman. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Be that guy spewing all over the internet, all these promises and taking your money.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Working from home, I love the fact that I don't have to wear a suit and that I wear track pants every single day. But there is something to say about wearing a very fit for you suit and like custom suit, custom shirt every now and again.
The honest thing that happened, not every day. When I first started dating my wife, she was still in college and I was a little bit older than her. And her mom was not really sure. At the time, I was a bartender and I had side jobs that I did. I had my little businesses going, but ultimately I attended bar to pay my rent. And her mom wasn't really high on that. And I don't really blame her at all. I would do the same thing probably. Thankfully, my daughter didn't do that to me. But anyway, long story short, she said, are you sure you want to marry a guy that doesn't wear a suit to work? I mean, don't you want a professional guy? And that was where my motivation came from. I'm like, all right, I'm going to show this lady I'm never going to wear suit and tie unless I'm going to a function that I have to wear one.
Right. And, well, I think that paid off.
You call my own shots, right? I wanted to call my own shots. And that was the motivation. And so as I learned more and more about how to run a business, I learned from my own things that I wanted to achieve personally. And so my thought was, is how do I get these guys to think to be themselves because they're confident in their financial abilities, their work ethic, and all these things. And so they will respond. I'm just telling everyone that's watching this video, these folks will respond if you take this role of creating this culture through transparency and through teaching them. I have never had a meeting about how to fix a toilet or make an air conditioner run. First of all, I don't really know how to make an air conditioner run. I know what a thermostat is. That didn't stop me from running a business.
I turn it on. I turn it up. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I wanted to empower these people and not say, explain to them, when someone offers you $1 or $2 more per hour, why do you keep jumping for that? Mm-hmm. Because you're financially in trouble. You need it. Or when you get technicians that you have a pay system that's commission-based and they're doing everything to sell and they're making customers mad, but you don't get rid of them. And all the other employees know that they're doing things they shouldn't be doing, but you keep them because they're their highest performer for you. They're out. Yep. I love a sacrifice like that.
Oh, it's one of the best things you can do for your culture.
That's the best thing you can do for your culture.
You want to show the rest of your staff that you value your team's culture above all things, above profits, you fire your number one salesperson.
Yep.
If they're a bad fit. Let's dive into that.
If they're a bad fit.
Because I think
that's point number three. Is that a key part that you left out there?
Yeah, Evan. If they're a bad fit.
Like you said, sometimes you need that sacrificial goat.
Right? But I mean, that can also kind of come into point number three when we get to there. But I do want to get to the random question generator because, of course, you know that it is something that we do in our show. So I actually haven't read them. So I actually don't even know what the questions are. So no, you haven't either. I don't even know what they are this time either. So if you were to choose question one, two, or three, which question do you want? Or four. There's actually four.
There's four this time.
There's four this time.
I'll take four because I've never had four before.
Dude, we go down that road. Hang on.
That's what she said.
What recent thing have you decided that you're completely over and done with?
People with low moral value, dishonesty, and integrity. I'm completely done with it.
Is that from, I guess that's part of the culture, right? So have you ever had, I mean, I guess in the Billy Goat's existence, feel free to kind of decline this. And this kind of actually lays into that question that we talked about earlier, about letting that top salesperson go. When was the last time you've had to fire somebody who wasn't a cultural fit or somebody?
We let her $1 million+ plumber go about 9 months ago. He was a bad culture fit. He was a top salesperson in plumbing.
How did the team react to it?
Everybody, it was amazing what happened. We replaced that revenue through our other employees.
Everyone else steps up because they're excited to be at work again.
Yep, absolutely. We did it. We did it about 9 months ago. And my managers are so used to, they worked for me for years. And they were like, I think we've got a situation on our hands. How do you want to deal with it? And I said, tell me more. And they told me some stuff, showed me some stuff. They proved what they were talking about. And I said, all right, bring them in. That was it. It was done. $1.2 million. We let walk out the door. And guess what? We grew 60%.
Yeah, it's incredible what happens and the buy-in that you get from your team when you make a decision like that. Because now you're walking your walk, right? And this kind of ties this perfectly ties in with point number three, right? So, I mean, the 3 points that you had sent us, number one was taking back control of your business. So identifying it's an issue. And now we're going to start having these conversations. Number two is sharing your financials, right? Diving into that, being transparent, being honest about where it is that you are as a company, how much money you're actually making so that you can get more buy-in from your team. And then point number three, undoing years of bad decisions. And I think this kind of fits nicely with what it is you're talking about now, because at the end of the day, we're creatures of habit. And it's very easy for us to fall back into those old grooves, those old habits of what was easy and what we continually went back to. So how is it that you then stop not only your team, but yourself from falling back into those old habits of bad culture that you're trying to undo and move forward as a company?
Well, first and foremost, hopefully you get to the point where falling back is hard to do, because good culture breeds good culture and it's contagious, just like bad culture is contagious, right? And so it's staying on target making sure that you're doing what you should do. And let me give you an example. Every day we do things that tick away at good culture that we do, and we don't realize we're doing it. And for instance, let's just take payroll. My favorite subject. This is the best culture killer in the world, is the way that we pay people. So I remember back in the early 2000s, there was this drain thing that came out, and you could eat it. You could eat this drain stuff. And the goal was, what they taught you to do is you go and you show them this drain stuff, and you put it down the drain, and it eats all the enzymes, and it makes their drains clean. And you can, and you actually would take a bite of it, and they go, "Ooh," and they go, "Yeah, it's safe." And they bought it from you. But the way they got us to sell it to our employees to get them to sell it is they taught us about spiffs. I never heard of a spiff before. And so if you sold this $49.99, don't quote, I imagine that's what it costs. I can't remember. If you sold this jar for $50, let's say, we would give the employee a $10 or $20 spiff. So, and we probably paid $10 for it, and we made $20, and the tech made $20, or probably what it was. And as always, when we create these little things like this, the only one winning is the company selling the product, right? Because we just added overhead or labor cost, COGS, cost to the cost of running our business. And then once we started using the spiff program for this thing, then we're like, well, why don't we spiff them for doing this? Hey, we'll even spiff them for showing up with a clean. We'll spiff them for having their uniform dressed all nice and clean. And we started spiffing for all these things, and we spiffed ourselves into 30% labor cost. And I'm a big believer in that spiffs creates this problem. It's another culture problem, right? Because now the owner is paying out extra money, and his labor costs are going up. And it's very hard to have a positive attitude when you don't have any money. It's so hard. But not only that, we put more pressure on the payroll department, because now they got to start keeping up with all this. And so we created more work for them. But yet we're not spiffing them, and we're not paying them more. And we're literally just spiffing for something that, if you train them properly, they would just go ahead and do. And that is one of that spiffs alone are a culture killer, in my opinion. Culture killer because they create more work and more stuff that the payroll department has to do. It takes the department manager has to deal with it when you have department managers. The techs have to make sure that they're getting all their spiffs, so they spend time looking at their payroll as soon as they get it. You want something that's super simple that really rewards your technicians, makes them happy, that makes you happy, and it's so easy. It doesn't burden anyone in the office. It doesn't burden anyone in the field, and it doesn't burden you as the owner. And this is one of the things that, you know, as we've gotten more and more into training and all this stuff, these are the things that just kind of slip through the cracks, that these trainers that maybe they haven't ever run a business, they don't understand the implications of this kind of procedure or bonusing for everything. You call it a spiff, bonus, whatever you want. The other thing that's a culture killer is commission, because technically in the States, commission's illegal if you don't pay time and a half over 40 hours, some states over 8 hours. And so again, when we're doing commissions, we're like, a lot of companies start off like this. And I know the people out there listening, you probably go, "Oh yeah, this has happened." And we've all done it. I've done it. Is you start off with, "I'll give you 20%. That's how we started back in the early 2000s, late 90s. We'll give you 20% of everything you sell. And then the guy goes out and sells this $25,000 job, and you owe him $5,000. And there's no $5,000 in the job because you didn't price it right. Right. And then we go, "Well, I'll pay you 20%, but minus the material so we can get it knocked down, because I'm getting killed here." Right. Mm-hmm. And then we do that for a little while, and we go, "Oh, okay. So if you use a subcontractor, I'm going to deduct that as well. So I'm giving you 20%, but I'm deducting the material now. I'm deducting the subcontractor now. And oh, if you use a helper, I'm going to deduct that." And so you just keep taking away. And so you're killing the integrity, because you told him you'd pay him 20% of everything until he actually went out and sold some big stuff, and it started costing you more than you can afford to pay him. And so you started cutting back on it and changing it. And so now this is the years of bad decisions, right? Because almost every company is in this situation right now. I see it, because they come to us all the time about how to pay people. And so now that we've got them against us, everybody's checking to make sure they're not getting screwed, if you will, because it's so complicated now. All right, what was the material cost on this? You know what? I won't use any material. I'll sell less because the material's costing me money. So I'll go around it or I'll just fix this part. And now you got a callback because they should have replaced it. And so it creates all of these problems. And now you're doing callbacks all the time. And these are just the little things that we just do every day. We don't realize that just kind of really stamp down our culture problem. It just really makes it hard to run a good, really high elevated culture in your company. And so if we could stop doing these things that complicate our companies, complicate our pay systems, complicate every part of our business and start simplifying the business and making sure that everybody understands where the business is going and what we're all trying to achieve together, then your culture is going to go up higher. And this is more profitable to you than raising your prices. And so you're going to have to get your business back. You're going to have to get them to an NLP system that will provide this culture that you're looking for. You need to take the pressure off of them of having to sell something, because if they go to a job and get a zero ticket, they get nothing, right? Well, as soon as they get nothing, are they happy or are they mad? I don't think they're happy. Because they didn't get it. They got a zero ticket. The customer said, no, I'm not doing business with you today, whatever. And then they go to the next job. And then they get yelled at because they got a zero ticket. So then you just pile on his unhappiness, right? How are you building culture in that situation? But if you had a pay system that rewarded them in a way that was very simple for them to understand and rewarded them well and rewarded the company as well, now you have harmony. And so this is how we build culture. And not only that, we improve the financials at the same time because everybody's in a very positive culture. And so this is what we do. We really help companies undo this legacy culture killing stuff. We sell software. There's no doubt about it. That's what I do, right? But we're the only software company. We're introducing Sarah Academy at the end of this month or first of February. This academy will show them how I do these meetings. It will show them the meetings they need to have to make these changes. It will show them how to use Sarah the way that I would use it so they can maximize profitability. And we're very excited about it. It's got all kinds of stuff on there that will help our clients. And that's something that a software company doesn't do. They take your money and they don't answer the call when you need something. We have a full-blown customer service department. We run our software company like a air conditioning plumbing company should be ran, right? We take care of our customers. We want them to come back. We want them to keep doing things. And we help improve their businesses. And so this is why I wanted to get on here today and talk about these three things and how just the little things that we're doing are causing these problems for us in our businesses. And let's start undoing this legacy bad culture.
I love it. When you talked about spiffs and bonuses being something that can really hurt your culture, how is it that you would then go about rewarding employees or benefiting employees for performance that's going above and beyond what's expected of them? I know you're still a big believer in compensating people fairly, number one,
yeah.
But then also bonusing them as well, right?
Yes, sir.
Because you talked about bonusing them at the end of the year. So what does that type of a structure look like? How do you keep that simple? Because I do agree that complicated bonus programs will absolutely kill your culture. It will kill your employees' confidence. It will drain them of their ability to perform. So how is it that you can do it in a simplified way to still reward people for going above and beyond?
We don't tie anything to revenue that they make as technicians. Everybody gets to win. Even if it's just the guy that's delivering parts, he wins at the same rate that everyone else wins on the bonus program. Right? If the bonus is $5,000 for every single employee in the business, that's awesome. But if it's $10,000 for that high performer and $100 for that guy that drives the parts around, that's a bad culture.
Right.
So we
the bonuses don't matter what pay.
The bonus is from the profit. And that technician that's the number one salesperson in your company did get there without the people in the office. He didn't get there without that guy getting those parts to him. He didn't get there without that installer doing a fantastic job on the job that he sold. Mm-hmm. It's a team, 100% team all the way through. And so we don't go through and try to give people stuff that they don't deserve. Every single person received the same dollar amount of a bonus for building the company and making it profitable. And then we tack on to that. This is something that y'all would like. We tack on an additional $100. This is how you build culture and keep people coming back and keep people working for you, because we have almost zero turnover. If someone leaves our company, we pretty much force them to leave. right? We're ahead of the curve. So every single employee gets $100 for every month that they work for the business. That's the other bonus. So there's two bonuses. We do well, everybody gets the bonus, and then everyone on top of that bonus gets $100. So if you've been with the company 6 months, you're getting $600 plus that bonus that everyone got. You've only been there 6 months. What would you do if you walked out of there with $3,500 and you just started?
I'm staying.
Exactly. And now you're going, okay, well, what do I need to do to help? And so that's how we do it. We don't discriminate on that. We encourage that. So we encourage longevity. So as you rack up months at $100, I mean, that's $1,200 a year. That adds up in a hurry. Mm-hmm. 5 years. Well, I guess it was 48 months that was the highest amount paid, because that was our 4 year. January 1's 4 years. So
you continue that every year? You pay every year for every month?
Next year, okay. $6,000. But we can afford to do it.
So, right.
But that's the point.
Right.
Because we built this culture to where we expect this. So let's go out and achieve it. I think we lost Thaddeus.
So my, is one, sorry, I have two questions. My internet, it's
because
my
internet is hung, but my parents have it.
Yeah, exactly.
I keep drinking that peanut butter fucking whiskey, and now I'm just like, fuck it, full send. How do you forecast? So, I mean, you have somebody, you have an employee that's been there for 10 years, 120 months, $100, that's $12,000. How do you adequately forecast for that? The second, I have another question, but we'll get to that in a second. How do you forecast for that later on down the road? Because I mean, that's 10 years down the road. I mean, heck, 20 years down the road, you're now looking at $24,000 bonus per year. How do you forecast for that in your financials and your budgets?
So that's exactly how we do it in our budgets, is how we forecast it, because we know where they'll be at the end of that year. And so we put it in, price it into our product, into our business. This is a very radical way to bonus, I'll be honest with you, because it can get quite mm-hmm. large, right? But mm-hmm. we're fine with it.
Well, and it brings back the same thing we talked about earlier of what's more expensive. Is it finding someone new and training someone new, or is it keeping someone on board that's already meeting yeah. the expectations of the company?
That's the other thing. What does it cost to replace someone? What does it cost mm-hmm. for the constant turnover? Mm-hmm. Stop the turnover. That's the key. And take the best people that are going to represent your brand the way they should be representing it. And this will all come together. You'll get paid back. It's cheaper to pay someone $6,000 for being there 5 years or $12,000 for 10 years than it is to constantly be retraining somebody and causing and doing that and having this revolving door. It's much easier to run a business when you're doing less callbacks, because everybody appreciates the job that they have. They're not there just because they need a paycheck. They appreciate where they work. And so the callbacks get taken down. The turnover gets taken down. All of these things are extremely expensive. And that is what costs companies thousands and thousands of dollars annually. I'm not saying we don't get callbacks. It happens. We make mistakes. People make mistakes. But we're not a callback problem business. And if you're constantly doing callbacks before you get to the real calls, because you have this policy, I'm going to get these callbacks to priority, and you're doing all of those before you even get to the ones that are earning you some money, you're going backwards every day. And that's just from years and years of experience.
Well, the other part of that is that, like, when you think about, sorry, I keep getting tripped out by my internet. It's just been blowing my mind. And I forget the point that I was going to make on it.
You got to write shit down.
Well, I have some other things down. I have my next question down on it. But anyways, oh, I remember the point. So when you think about Sarah and utilizing the systems and utilizing the software, what it does for HVAC business is you actually reduce the amount of employees in your office, right? And so when you think about that, you reduce your staff, you're reducing your overhead. So the reductions that you actually have staff and your overhead help fund these sorts of bonus structures, which is also the fascinating part that I don't think we haven't bridged that yet, but I did, because I remember you saying that you reduce your office staff by utilizing and putting in Sarah into your system.
Well, so, I mean, part of it. Reduce is really not what we do. I mean, we don't overhire. And I'm a believer in giving everybody an opportunity, but not having people just to have people. And again, I'll go to softwares. If your software requires you to bring in more people than you need, then you're back into this situation that it's helping you have bad culture, because you're constantly having to hire people to operate it, And so don't overhire, hire better, right? And hire only what you need. And this is what we do. So we don't reduce staff, obviously. What we do is we take these people and we give them better jobs. We reassign them. Like we have them help us on rehashing, or they just do more things. Maybe they help in the accounting. They just do extra little things because we free up their workload. And we can free up their workload with less people if that's what you want to do. Or you keep the people you have and you grow into those many people. And so we went from $7 million in revenue at Billigo last year to $11.5 million this year. And we did it with the same four ladies in the office. So we wanted to see how far we could go. Before we really needed to add another person. And my employees understand that what we're trying to prove here, because Billigo is a beta test company for Sarah, so we can try these ideas out, right? And then pass them along to you. So I'll do all the hard work and the cost and the burden that goes with all this testing, and then we'll give you the results. And so what we realized was going from 7 million to 11.5 million in a 12-month period with these same four ladies and then the same three department managers. Well, two department managers and then an indoor sales manager, if you will. So we've had those seven people from day one. Every year, we continue to grow from $0 on the first day to $11.5 million on the fourth year. And so our budgets for 2023 for Billigo is we're actually thinking we're going to do about 18 to 20 million. So we looked at doing the budget for 18 million. Even in this down economy, we feel like our company is going to grow more than it did last year. And that's a whole nother podcast we could get into and why we're not forecasting a 20% dip like we're forecasting growing about 40, 50% over this year. And so we sit down and we're like, okay, where are we inefficient? Where do we need someone or more than one person or several people? When I ask them, how do you feel like your job is? Are you overloaded? Are we making you work extra? And they're like, no, we're still leaving at 4 o'clock. I get here. It's 8 o'clock. I leave at four. That's still happening. And I'm like, well, at what point do you want us to bring in somebody? And they're like, well, I mean, maybe we can do it. Maybe we wait till we get into the spring, because right now, I mean, we just don't see like we need anyone. And so I keep pushing them because I want them to go, well, tell me if you need someone, right? We want to get this ratio right. And as we continue to build these things out in Sarah, it kind of reduces the need to keep adding people. And so what we did is we went ahead and put one extra person in the budget, but there was no plan to hire them at this point. So we think we can go to, we're going to see if we can get to 18 million with the same seven people, because they're not complaining. Think about that for a second.
Yeah, I mean, but this ties back into everything that we've talked about today. Every single point that we've talked about today. When you have a great culture and people go to bat for the company, they will continue to go to bat for you time in and time out again. And this really exemplifies that point. They're like, hey, you know what? We started, now we're going to almost double your revenue. And by the way, if anybody wants to think about how does Billy's mindset shift about economic times, go check out our episode that we had in December with Landon Brewer and Billy, because we talked extensively about the upcoming recession. How do you change your mindset? But like, when you have your office staff bought into this, to be able to do this, to say, we actually don't need anybody. Powerful, powerful stuff.
It really is. I was expecting to hire people this year, and so far we're not interviewing, we're not doing anything. And so we'll see. I will report back if it changes. That is definitely. But as far as the office staff is concerned at all, and Sarah's only been on the market a year. Our competitors have 10 years head start, and they could have solved these problems 10 years ago, and they never did. And so we're solving these problems now, and we're a young company and we're growing extremely fast. And are we perfect? No, not even for a second. Will we ever be perfect? Not as long as I own it, because I never stop. But we're releasing new product every 2 weeks now. We've got it in a 2-week cadence. We got all the teams built. We're really moving through, and we're always thinking about how do we get rid of this workload on these folks, so that they can take a breath, go to the bathroom, nobody ever wants the dispatcher to go on vacation or call in sick, right? And we're running thousands and thousands of calls a year with basically four people. And if they go and they all go on vacation, and we have a very lucrative vacation package as well, part of the culture. I think you get three or four weeks after 4 or 5 years. It's pretty crazy. We really take care of them. So that's what we do at Billigo. We just continue to couple. If you want to innovate and get profitable, you need to talk to us. I mean, that's just the way it is. And I can back up everything. That's one thing I'll do. There's a lot of guys on social media yelling, "Oh, I would take $100 million from my company." Oh, no, no. Well, no, you wouldn't, because nobody would give it to you. And I'm doing 40, 50, 60 million a year. No, I'll back up anything. So if anybody wants to see anything that I'm talking about, if you want to see our numbers, if you want to see whatever, I'll show them to you. Come to our office. I'll break it all out for you. We'd love for people to come to Sarah and Billy Go. And,
well, there you go. If you want to get in touch with Billy, billy@sarah.tech, he will welcome you with open arms. I've seen your facility too, by the way. Billy Go and Sarah in one house. Phenomenal place. I'm going to shamelessly plug you to be able to, if anybody wants to get in touch, billy@sarah.tech. Sarah.tech is their website. If you're like, fuck, I just want to get on a demo. sales.sarah.tech/HVAC-review. To do that.
Yeah. I just have one announcement I'd like to make. Ooh. Sarah is doing really well, and we actually create efficiency and culture in Sarah just like we do at Billigo. I mean, that's the whole point, right? And we're very lean and we're very efficient in what we do. And so we put budgets together for 2023, and we just have I want to talk to y'all about how much we cost now. Now that we've gotten past that growth stage, that startup phase where we needed every dollar we could get. So going forward, starting February 1, Sarah is only $395 a month for up to four technicians and only $149 a month for any additional tech. So it's a very affordable, and it really cuts the cost to run your business. In my opinion, Sarah is free. It's very affordable. It's not a long-term contract. It's just a one-year contract. And for only $395 a month for up to four techs, that's a smoking deal. And if you have more techs than that, it's only an additional $149 per tech. And there's no charges for the office, no charges for anybody in the warehouse, none of that stuff. It's just
people. And no charges for your marketing company.
That's right. That is right.
AKA on purpose media.
That is right. So.
And so just to clarify, $395 for up to four techs, not $395 for the first four techs, correct?
Yeah. So you can have 2, 3, 4. It doesn't matter. It's $395.
And then additional is $149.
Is $149. And we have released this to out there in the space and seen a lot of people are saying, all right, this makes a lot of sense. They've been hearing about what we're talking about, and it's flying off the shelf.
Love it.
Very excited. Got a lot of new partners we'll be announcing here in the next few weeks that we're very excited to that have decided to join Sarah and co-market and back us up. I think you're going to be surprised by the names that are behind it. That's going to be pretty awesome.
Can't wait for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can't wait to tell everybody. You got to keep your mouth shut.
Awesome. Billy.
Well, I know only half of us has to keep their mouth shut.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not me. Actually, I don't even know if that's what you guys were talking about before.
You can say whatever you want. Your internet will go out. Nobody hears you.
There we go.
I love it. Billy, thank you so much for coming on, my friend.
I'm seeing a question here we didn't ask. I like telling this story. They asked, how do we come up with the name Billy Go?
Oh, I missed that.
No. So those ones in the private chat. So we're gonna finish off with our last question. But those are ones that you've already said.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, we wanted to make sure that we're not duplicating answers here.
Yeah, basically what you said in that chat, you can't say the same thing.
For those who didn't hear it, my wife kept saying, Billy, go do this, go do that. Billy, go take the trash out. Whatever she was telling me. And then she said it so many times, I went and bought the billygo.com. So
there you go. It was a great story. And I remember talking to her about that in Vegas, and she howled and she laughed. So I guess, Billy, one final question. What is one question that you wished people would ask you more, but don't?
So you ask me this every time. And so I got to come up with something different all the time.
Let's go culture related.
Yeah. So, hey, that's a perfect segue. Why don't you ask me about culture? Because that's really not a question anybody asks. So I would love for people to start asking me about more culture tips, because I have a a million different things you can do. And every single one of them are very simple. And the beauty of it is they start taking effect immediately as soon as you start implementing these little bitty things. And it doesn't even take any work. It's as easy as taking the time to text them and tell them, great day today. Thanks for everything. Or tell them thank you every time you see them, your employees. It's just little things like that that really make a big difference and get people excited about working at that company with you. I never refer to myself as a boss. That's the last thing I'm going to do. I work with these people and they work with me, and together we build really great businesses. I'm not one to brag on myself, but I know how to build businesses. I know how to build them profitably, and I know how to build them fast. And I have a lot of this information that I want to share. And that's why I'm on these podcasts so often, because I really want to share what I know. Because once you have the answers, the little answers, that you don't have to have big answers, just a lot of little ones add up to big things. It really makes a big difference.
It really does.
I would agree.
Thank you so much, Billy. And then,
yeah, I was just going to say that the knowledge that you possess of the years in the trade, what you've accomplished, what you've started, what you've exited out of, and what you're currently building again to maybe exit out of again, is a testament to who you are.
Well, thank you for that. I'll buy you a drink next time I see you.
I think you bought all the drinks last time we got in touch with each other, and we know how that ended. So,
yeah, no, we don't. We don't remember. I remember dropping a drink.
Yeah, I was going to say, as soon as both of you dropped a drink, the night was over for you too.
Yep, and we both left. Everybody left. We dropped the drinks.
That's how you know when you've had too much. I'm still holding on to mine. We've had a great time with you, Billy. Thank you so much for joining. Appreciate it very much. Thank you for all the value you bring to the show, to our listeners, and to the industry as a whole. Appreciate you, my friend.
Thank you very much. Thank you, guys.
Take care. Till next time.
Until next time.
All righty.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Well, that's a wrap on another episode of HVAC Success Secrets Revealed. Before you go, two quick things. First off, join our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/HVAC Revealed. The other thing, if you took one tiny bit of information out of this show, no matter how big, no matter how small, all we ask is for you to introduce this to one person in your contacts list. That's it. That's all. One person. So they too can unleash the ultimate HVAC business. Until next time. Cheers.